Good morning. It seems to me, every time that I have a need or a circumstance, something going on in my life, I inevitably run across some readings about someone or something that hits me right in the head. And today's reading, Daniel, is one of those circumstances. Right about the time I'm trying to get a handle on some issues or something going on in my life, trying to understand things, along comes a reading like this story that we read this week in Daniel. It's really, to me, it's one of those duh moments, a reminder that I'm not in control. It's not my will, it's God's will that needs to be done. Now, surely I know that, and I understand that, but letting God's will be done is not sometimes so clear for me. This is where the admiration and Daniel stems from. As we know, Daniel was a Jew, and he was tossed into a world where he was surrounded by people that were different and believed different and acted different than he did. But yet he did it right. He was obedient, faithful, patient, doing God's will. Certainly a lesson for me at a time when I needed it. I've heard it said that a lot of crimes are not sins and a lot of sins are not crimes. The story of Daniel indicates that's pretty close to right. In this sixth chapter of Daniel we read today, Daniel is a righteous man convicted of a crime, which is not a sin. Daniel purposely committed this crime because he did not wish to commit that sin. Now this morning I want to take a look at Daniel, see how God worked in his life, and see how me, can learn from this chapter in Daniel. Daniel's deliverance from the lion's den is one of the most popular and well-known stories that we teach our children in Sunday school. It's not the first deliverance of Daniel, but it's certainly one of the best loved and well-known. So let's take a minute and review this week's readings, chapters 1 through 5, and then we'll look at chapter 6 today. As we read in chapter 1, Daniel and his three friends, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego, in chapter 1, were delivered from a confrontation with the Babylon government and Nebuchadnezzar the king. While these four godly Hebrews were willing to live in a world, a Babylon world, their names were changed, they attended schools there, part of the government, they were not willing to eat the food served at the king's table. God granted these men favor in their eyes of their foreign superiors, and they were allowed to eat vegetables rather than the food set aside for them by the king. Because of their faithfulness, God gave these men an extra measure of wisdom, greatly impressing the king, who gave them positions of influence and responsibility in his kingdom. In chapter 2, God once again delivers Daniel and his three friends. The king had a dream he could not understand. Neither could his counselors and wise men reveal or interpret this dream. In anger, the king commanded the execution of all the wise men in the land, including Daniel. Daniel learned of the king's dilemma and was able to reveal to the king the dream, its meaning, sparing his own life and the lives of the other Babylonian wise men. Chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar created the golden image, before which the people of all nations were to bow down and worship. Daniel refused to bow down. Again in anger, Nebuchadnezzar threatened them with death if they did not obey his decree. Refusing to obey, they were tossed into the fiery furnace. God sent an angel, and he was present with them and preserved them from death, injury, even the smell of the fire. The king was so impressed, he issued a decree granting the Jews freedom to worship their God without hindrance. In chapter 4, speaks of Nebuchadnezzar's deliverance. He's delivered from pride and oppression for a period when his sanity and a kingdom is removed from him. And he must live like a beast in the field for his own testimony. It appears he came to a genuine acceptance and repentance as a result of God working in his life. In chapter 5, Chapter 5 is a story on Belshazzar's condemnation. In contrast to Nebuchadnezzar's conversion in 4, because of the rejection of the truth and his blasphemy against God of Israel, I only talked about it for one brief period. It's only recorded in a very short, chapter, not a lot's known, but really it announces condemnation and death. Our reading today in chapter 6, we find Daniel's life in danger. He'll experience God's deliverance once again. Daniel 1 reveals what set Daniel apart from the rest of his Jewish peers and brought him into a position of promise and power in King Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom. But chapter 6, the one read today, identifies what sustained Daniel over the many years of his ministry and enabled him to survive the crises in his life. Before we look at that miracle that Daniel witnessed and we see the power of God's will, we need to set the stage for the upcoming events. In verses 1 through 9, we read about the conspiracy against Daniel. It seems good for Darius to appoint 120 satraps, princes, over the kingdom. They should be in charge of this whole kingdom. Now, I wasn't sure about a satrap. You read in other writings and other scriptures and the terminology, so I looked it up. And the official terminology for the satrap, it was a name given to the governors of the provinces of ancient Median and Persian empires. A satrap was the head of the administration of his province, and found surrounded by all but royal court. He collected taxes, controlled the local officials, the subject tribes, cities, and was a supreme judge. Before whose chair every civil and criminal case would be brought. And over these were three commissioners, one which is Daniel. In verse 3, Daniel began to distinguish himself among the commissioners and the satraps because he possessed an extraordinary spirit, and the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. The commissioners and satraps began to try to find ground of accusation against Daniel in regarding to government affairs. They couldn't find any grounds. He was faithful, and no negligence or corruption to be found in him. Then these men, verse 5, said, we shall not find any ground of accusation against Daniel unless we find it against, unless we find him with regard to his God. And these commissioners came by agreement to the king and spoke as follows. King Darius lived forever. All the commissioners of the kingdom and princes and satraps, the high officials and governors have consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce an injunction that anyone who makes a petition for any god or man beside you for 30 days shall be cast in the lion's den. In verse 9, we find out that King Darius signed the document. It became the law. Now, this is the part where I struggle with the will of God. Daniel knows what has been done. He knows where this whole thing is going. He understands the will of God. He knows exactly what he's going to do about it. Unfortunately for me, sometimes it's not that easy. It's quite obvious that Daniel has a personal relationship one-on-one with God. I, like all of you, have a relationship with God. However, for me, sometimes it's a little more like, let me show you. A little more like this. There's a couple more people involved in my relationship, in my head. I've got the worldly Rick on this side, and I've got the godly Rick on this side. Oh, got them backwards. All right, that's what I wanted to have. So, the empty head. So, what would I have done in a circumstance like that? You know, how do I handle things in my life? Had I been Daniel, the worldly Rick would have, you know, this guy, what are these guys trying to prove? I need to go speak with the king. I need to speak with Darius personally. They're setting me up, and that's not right. The godly Rick, which would have taken Daniel's approach, don't worry about it. Just do God's work. Pray about it. Everything will be okay. Now, Daniel knew this document was signed, and he entered his house, like he always did, with a roof chamber facing toward Jerusalem. He continued kneeling on his knees 3 times a day, praying and giving thanks before God, as he had done previously. Now, what would I have done? You know, worldly Rick, maybe I should close the shutters. You know, I can pray to God like I always do, and I won't be seen. You know, I won't be in trouble. Daniel's approach, or the godly Rick would say, just do the right thing. Keep on doing what you always do, and have faith. So in verse 11, sure enough, here comes the guys. They found Daniel praying to God. They went to the king in verse 12 and said, look, they approached and spake about the king's injunction. Did you not sign this injunction that a man who makes petition to any god or man beside you, O king, for 30 days shall be cast in the lion's den? The king answered and said, this statement is true, according to the laws of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be revoked. In 13, they dropped the plug on Daniel. Then they answered and spoke before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you or to the injunction which you signed, but keeps on making his petitions 3 times a day. As soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed, set his mind on delivering Daniel, and even till sunset kept exerting himself to rescue him. Verse 15, we read, Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, recognize, O king, that the law of the Medes and Persians, that no junction or statute which of the king's establishes may be changed. What were Daniel's options at this point? What if it were me in that circumstance? Now, if I'm in that circumstance, here's worldly, you know, I need to get out of here. I don't want to be eaten by lions. I can worship God. I can praise God from any place. But if you take Daniel's approach and God's will, got it, got the right one. God's in control. I did what was right. My fate's in his hands. And then the king gave the order. He had to give the order. He was committed. And Daniel was brought and cast in the lion's den. The king spoke and said to Daniel, God whom you constantly serve will himself deliver you. And a stone was brought and laid over the mouth of the den, the king sealed with his own signet ring and the signet rings of the nobles, so that nothing might be changed in regards to Daniel. Then the king went off to his palace and spent the night fasting, and no entertainment was brought before him, and his sleep fled from him. Now reluctantly, the king gave the order for Daniel to be brought and tossed into the lion's den. Unlike Nebuchadnezzar, who defied any god to deliver the Hebrews from death of the fiery furnace, he speaks words of encouragement to Daniel. He assures Daniel that it is God who most certainly will deliver him. Is it possible that this king, unlike Belshazzar, had read the records of Nebuchadnezzar's kingdom and come to believe in God of the Hebrews? It certainly would seem so. This king's final words to Daniel they show this man's faith. I can't get that word out. My tongue's tied up. In his constant obedience to God, having spoken the words of faith and hope to Daniel, he had Daniel lowered in the lion's den. I think it's interesting they don't say thrown in the lion's den. It says lowered into the lion's den. And a stone was put over it and sealed. No man dared tamper with a stone. Now, something interesting strikes me about that whole scenario. Although Daniel was the one wrongly accused in the process of his own life, his execution, that section of Daniel 6 talks more about the king. The king orders Daniel lowered in the lion's den, and then the rest of the king speaks words of encouragement. He abstains from entertainment, and sleep eludes him that night. It's like they're focusing back on the king. It appears the king suffered more than Daniel did. You know, certainly I would believe that Daniel had a great night's sleep. The angel of the Lord was with him. He was present as well as he was with the gentleman or the Hebrews in the furnace. And the mouth of the lions were stopped, preventing harm to Daniel. Now in verse 19, this is Daniel's deliverance. The king arose at dawn at the break of day and went in haste to the lion's den. He knew Daniel was okay. I didn't know. He'd hoped. When he came near the den to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice. The king spoke and said to Daniel, "Servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you?" He's talking to him. He knows he's alive. And Daniel spoke to the king, "O king, live forever," which I thought was interesting that he gave the king certainly respect after he'd been tossed in the lion's den. Now we go back to me. In Daniel's shoes, what have I done? You know, certainly worldly Rick, you know, of course God saved me. He wouldn't let me perish at the hands of these men. God's will and the proper response, Daniel's response, would be the godly world. Give thanks, honor, and praise. My God sent his angel and shut up the lion's mouth. They've not harmed me as much as I've found it. As much as I was found innocent before him and also toward you, O king, I've committed no crime. The king was very pleased and gave the order for Daniel to be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den. No injury was found on him because he trusted in God. This story, as I mentioned earlier, is a fine example of faith and obedience and trust. Trust that God's in control. I mentioned earlier that I have challenges. We all have challenges in our life. And we look to the scriptures for support. And this week's reading in Daniel, for me, was like a 10-pound sledgehammer. I've recently had some situations going on, some things happening, where I thought I was doing the right thing and God's will was being done. But looking back, it was worldly Rick that was in control. As some of you may know, I've certainly been involved with a new position, a new job, a new opportunity come up at work or in the business. One day I'm driving down the road and my phone rings out of the clear blue sky. I get a phone call from a gentleman, a company, BP Castrol, one of the major oil companies. This gentleman knows who I am. He knew a lot about me and wants to know if I'm interested in making a jump, a move over to the BP Castrol team. Of course, I responded in a positive way and agreed to the process of filtering out candidates for this position. I got home that night and promptly informed Denise about what had happened, about the possibility of this opportunity that was in front of, I say me, but in front of us. It really was an us decision. I really didn't think I had a shot at this opportunity to being hired by one of the major oil companies. But I would go along and see what happens next. At this point, there's only one of the Ricks talking in my head. And that's the worldly Rick. Nice chance. But I don't think it'll go anywhere. A few days later, I had an interview with a guy on the phone in Chicago. Thought the interview went well. He said I should hear something in a week or so. By this time, godly Rick was actually speaking in my head a little bit. Denise and I talked. God's in control of my life. If his will, I may get a chance at this new shot. Who knows? We'll see. Lord, behold, a day later, I get a phone call. A guy out of Tennessee, Kentucky. He'd like me to interview with somebody in HR. They liked what I did. They wanted to see what more I had to offer and where it would go. He said I did well with the Chicago interview and was recommended to him that I interview with the HR department. Here comes worldly Rick again. You impressed them. Your knowledge and experience is something they're looking for. Keep it up. Along came that big day. It was prearranged for me to have a phone conversation with this lady in New Jersey, I think it was. And I was on my game. We talked for 45 minutes. Every question she had an answer for. It went real well. She informed me that I would hear something back in a week or so. They like that week or so thing. Lord and behold, the next day. Get a phone call the next day. They want me to fly to Phoenix. I need to fly to Phoenix and meet with them in person. So, worldly Rick's going crazy. All excited. Godly Rick's praying about the opportunity and trying to let God be in control of this thing. Worldly Rick, get a haircut. Shine your shoes. Look sharp. Go to Phoenix and knock them dead. Denise and I talk. Godly Rick, pray for blessings on this meeting. Pray it'll go well, and if it's His will, it's His will. So off to Phoenix we go. I go. I hate planes. So you know I was praying for my safe travel to and from Phoenix with God before I left. I'm met by a couple of people at the airport from BP. We go to have lunch and discuss this position that's open. And so I found it's a Western region. Meeting goes great. Spent 3 hours with these guys. They take me back to the airport. Back to LA I go. I felt the meeting went well. I was told I'd hear something back in a week or so. Next day. Worldly Rick is really shining at this point. Great job. It's an ideal position. It's not the ideal position for you, but it'll work. Denise and I talk, godly position. You need to pray about it. Ask for God's guidance on this issue. This is where I get myself in trouble. I start to listen to worldly Rick. And I semi-ignore the godly Rick. I don't shut him out. But I start thinking about my needs, my will. It's a great opportunity for me in a career basis. But there were drawbacks. The main drawback that we discussed was geographics. I'd have a distributor in Las Vegas. I would have a distributor in the Inland Empire. Being located here meant a lot of travel. Requires some overnights, San Diego, as well as trips to Vegas overnights. Godly Rick, you should know that being away from your family that much is not a good thing. Worldly Rick, money's great. Super 401k with matching dollar funds. Godly Rick, you know your time will be limited. You'll probably have less time for ecclesial events. I can explain that one away. Worldly Rick's good at that. I'll be home on the weekends. I'll still be able to make meetings on Sunday most of the time. Besides, I'll get a brand new Ford every 75,000 miles, an SUV. Godly Rick, what about the men's weekend, VBS, all the ecclesial events that you cook for? Worldly Rick, corporate Amex card, race tickets to Pomona, California Speedway. Wasn't paying attention to my godly Rick. So you can see where this whole thing is going. Got a little caught up in the glitz and glamour of this new opportunity, this new position. I wanted it bad, and deep down inside me, I knew it wasn't right. I was listening to the worldly voice in my head, and not the godly voice. This is the point where I get to say, whose phone is that? Denise and I discussed it many times, and we agreed it would happen if it was God's will. Well, it wasn't. The deal fell apart at the last minute. God knew it wasn't right for me, even though I didn't. I was crushed. Couldn't believe it. You know, down the drain. Happens. That happened last week on Friday. My sister came to town on Friday, said, Ben, a little off in terms of keep me occupied. And in my attempt to understand this whole process, along comes this week's reading in Daniel. It was then that I realized it was my will I was after and not God's will. Daniel just gave us six readings this week, six chapters of God's will, not his. Daniel put God first in his life. He lived the will of God, and God blessed him for it. So we come here today to remember that same obedience. The will of God lived out in Christ Jesus. He put aside all of his worldly needs to do the work of his Father. He, being tempted like us, was able to put off that temptation, not listen to that worldly voice that he must have had in his head as well. Christ led a perfect life free from sin. He gave us an example to live by. He was able to keep the will of God foremost in his mind. Christ knew he's our leader, our king, and God's will must be done. God also knew we'd fall short of this glory, so he sent Christ to us to die for our sins. The ultimate example of obedience and faith. He trusted in his Father to deliver him, and he did. So as we go out today, on the world today, and we face these daily challenges in front of us, let us be mindful of God's will. Sometimes we don't see it clearly or understand it. But pray about it. Ask for the guidance. He'll bless us.